never could have come this far. I took the good times, I'll take the bad times, I take you just the way you are. Need to know that you will always be the same old someone that I knew.
What will it take? Well, happy birthday, Billy Joel. Born 1949 on this day, one of the biggest selling artists in the world. 5 Grammys, singer of songs, huge catalogue. Honesty, Piano Man, She's Always a Woman, Tell Her About It, and the terrible We Didn't Start the Fire. After Billy Joel recorded this, he didn't think much of it, considering it a silly ballad that would probably get played at weddings only. How wrong he was. Just the Way You Are garnered 2 Grammys for the Record of the Year and Song of the Year in 79. And one songwriter delivered very high praise for this very song, saying it was one of the few songs that he wished he had written. And that songwriter, Paul McCartney. So there we have it. I don't profess to be a huge Billy Joel fan, Georgie Stiliano, but...
No, me neither. But I'm glad you said We Didn't Start the Fire is a terrible song. It really is.
It's just it's a shocker, isn't it?
But I always liked Vienna. That was a good one. I thought it was one of his early ones, but I liked that.
Yeah, but you can't get past his melodies, eh, Selwyn? He's a tunesmith, right?
Yeah, yeah, and the lyrics. I'm always a bit of a lyric fan. But I remember being on an assignment years ago in New York at going to the UN. But every yellow cab you got into seemed to me to be playing Billy Joel on the radio. And I kind of I realised that 42nd Street anchored him in as a hero forever. You know? But whenever I hear him, I kind of think about that.
Yeah, nice one. Thank you very much for sharing your stories about the time that you were on a seminar for work and income. Someone has just texted me, remain anonymous, that he did a seminar 10 years ago and they had to make a bridge out of popsicle sticks. Another one here, I had to go to one of those two-day things while on the sickness benefit in the 90s. I could navigate it, but the person leading was patronising, arrogant and quite insensitive. One chap walked out and would have been kicked off the benefit. He obviously was not work-ready. You're on the panel, RNZ National, and it's time for I've Been Thinking. Georgie, take it away.
Well, look, whenever I have the privilege of doing the panel, Wallace, I do try to come up with something mildly thought-provoking. But tonight's I've Been Thinking is a little bit more basic. I've been thinking about weddings, specifically my own pending nuptials. And what an absolute nightmare it is.
Yep.
The expense, the stress, these tiny little nuances, the family dynamics, it's honestly a headache. And we have tried to do it like, let's just have a fun cocktail party, super short, get married at the local church that Peter Jackson owns because it's Wellington, so who else would own it?
Yep.
And just keep it really short and sweet and simple and cheap. Yes, no, we were absolutely conned. The other thing I've noticed is getting married in Wellington in the middle of winter, perhaps we didn't help ourselves there, but all of the vendors, you call them, the people who supply your stuff, the booze, the food, the decorations, it seems to be crazy how few of them there are based in Wellington, which kind of makes me think maybe we don't have a lot of Wellington weddings, especially not in winter. But that's my I've been thinking for the night.
I don't think that's flippant or, I mean, I think that's one of the best I've been thinking I've heard. Because you know why, Georgie? So many listening will be able to relate it. Tell me if I'm wrong. 2101. Did your wedding discussions start with, look, let's just have a fish and chips on the beach. 3 months down the track is going to cost you $15,000. You know, because, oh, let's get a trestle table up. Oh, why not have a string quartet? Hey, by the way, why not get flowers? Photographer.
It's obscene. It's obscene. Yeah. It really is. And I just want it to be over.
The costs go up and up. Everywhere you turn in a wedding, it's exorbitant. It's extraordinary, right?
Mm, yeah. Well, I'm glad that this is relatable content for the dear listeners.
Good on you. All right. Have you got a budget?
Well, we did. It's long gone.
Selwyn?
I was going to say, how can anyone compete with that kind of, I've been thinking, you know, especially when I realised that I should be a mediator or a moderator or something. And Wallace, you know, we can sit down and you can actually tell the nation exactly how it has been for you in that space. But
Thank you, clearly we should
dedicate quite a segment to this. But look, I'll forego mine because I think this is one of the best I've been thinking of.
Tell us yours, Selwyn.
No, it is good, Selwyn.
Because it's just, well, you. I mean, can I ask you, Selwyn, are you married or have you been married?
Yeah.
So can you recall how your wedding discussions went?
Oh.
Was it simple?
Yeah, well, it was a bit the same. It was reasonably simple. But, you know, the two families were very stable, got on. You know, that's a big part of it, I think. Yeah. We funded it all ourselves, of course, and we stuck to a budget.
Yeah.
Look, it was okay, but everybody kind of had low expectations because I'd told all my side of the family that, you know, the reception was going to be fish and chips like you talked about before. And so it was quite a, you know, an eye-opener when the doors opened to the reception venue and they saw quite a spread waiting for them. So, you know, it was okay. It was good.
You see, here they come. Here they come, yeah. Sal and Jordy. My nephew's wedding plans include $6,000 for flowers.
Oof.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. Another one here. Wellington wedding at Breaker Bay Hall with clowns and candy floss, circus, then including food, all up 60 people, $3,500.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's all about the money. Let us know. Let us know. 2101. All right, you're on the panel, RNZ National, Georgie Stiliano and Selwyn Manning. A survey by electronic waste recycling organisation ECHO has revealed that 61% of businesses have not recycled e-waste in the past year. Why is this concerning? Well, e-waste is the fastest growing solid waste stream in the world. According to the World Health Organization, 53.5 million tons of it was produced globally in 2019, a few years ago now. So are we missing the message? Do we still not know how to dispose of electronic devices? With us is ECHO CEO Patrick Moynihan. Kia ora, Patrick.
Kia ora.
This,
how are you all?
Very well. This goes exactly into the weddings basket as well.
Because I like the sound of the circus wedding. Mm.
quite good. I like the sound of 3,500.
Well, here's one for you all then, including you, Patrick. Got married in Vegas for $25 US. But
not bad.
But in terms of
get a free mug with it or something.
Yeah.
In terms of batteries, many people would be shaking their heads around the mortar going, oh, I can relate to this. I don't know where to put my batteries either, Patrick Moynihan.
Yes. So batteries particularly, they're integrated in a huge amount of electronics these days. So it is a delicate mix, and it's something that we have to deal with, you know, on a daily basis. And it's kind of utilising organisations like ours that can dispose of the data that's on these devices, but also remove the batteries safely so that they don't catch fire, they don't catch fire in the red littered bins, all this sort of thing.
Why was it that so many businesses did not correctly dispose of what should be deemed or is deemed a very, very important waste product?
I think we're a very small market, so there's also no regulation or legislation in New Zealand. So we are the only country in the OECD that doesn't have this in place. So there's just very low awareness. A lot of New Zealand businesses won't have end-of-life technology policy, for instance. So they just, it's awareness, low awareness in the market.
Georgie.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And also, Wallace, you said in introducing this piece, you know, why are we missing the message? I would actually argue that the message is missing. We do not hear right. about this stuff. There is clearly a role here for central and local governments to do a big public awareness, kind of make it click sort of campaign to actually get this stuff through. If you look at the curbside recycling stuff and what a absolute palaver that has been in how long it's taken us to standardise, I really feel that we just don't know what we're meant to do. And there's a lot of us who want to do the right thing, but we just don't know what that is. I just think we've missed a trick here. Now we're going to just deal with the consequences.
Patrick?
Yeah, as a market and as a country, it's difficult for organisations to invest in infrastructure that's not matched by regulation and legislation. Mm. So things like in Australia, where they're ahead of us on this, they still have relatively low recovery rates of electronic waste, but they have made the legislation to ban the disposal of electronic waste in landfill, for instance.
Mm.
And they also have the regulatory framework to collect a tariff from the manufacturers, which is then redistributed through recyclers like myself, to further invest in infrastructure and have certainty around volumes and these sorts of things, because it's a scale issue as well. It's very difficult to spend $10 million on infrastructure if you don't have the volume.
Right.
But we were successful, I think it was about 2 years ago, so we received a $1.5 million funding grant from the Waste Minimisation Fund to install a big fancy bit of infrastructure to process flat screen and LCD TVs on shore, for instance.
Mm.
But it's our responsibility as a compliant and secure processor to then pass on a lot of these fees from the negative yielding products to then cover the cost to recover that material.
Salwyn, let's bring Salwyn in.
Yeah, what's fascinating me is we're hearing from Patrick how important the regulatory environment is to make sure outcomes are beneficial and such things. And yet politically, we're in a situation where we have a minister who is obviously positioned to deregulate much of New Zealand. So that's the first observation on it. But then getting down to it, we're focusing through business. And I'm kind of thinking here that's a two-way response, this one, Wallace, in a sense,
yeah.
that the end stage of the, you know, the electronic equipment that a business may have is quite extreme. When we consider the depreciation kind of schedules of economic benefit to businesses to be able to offload them and replace at a point before their end stage. But then it shifts perhaps it over to the community. And I'm just interested to hear from Patrick whether or not the main problem here is business. Would that tidy up the whole thing, even without a regulatory kind of willpower from a particular government at the moment? Or is there a two-way thing where the community also really needs to come into to scope on this whole issue as well as far as solution is concerned?
Patrick?
It's very much a two-prong approach. It is a more peculiar and niche waste stream from a lot of the other material types compared to municipal waste. But businesses, for instance, when they have, often will be on a three-year refresh cycle, for instance. Mm-hmm. So in that case, working with organisations like ourselves, we may be able to recover some value for that business to then, through the refurbishment and resale of said assets to then be used to offset the purchase of new assets. But from an end-of-life perspective, the consumers are the ones that are very much hit the hardest. They are the ones that these items don't have recoverable value at the end of life, and they do often cost to dispose of. So, like, we run community events, so we'll run 50 community events per year where the public can drop off, but we then engage with OEMs, so the original equipment manufacturers, and large businesses to sponsor those events so the public can drop off for free.
That's great.
So in the ideal state, a regulatory framework is created, a product stewardship is created, and that money is then spent on the public being able to dispose of all this material at no charge. They inherently have to pay for it up front when they purchase the items, but it's still the framework on which they dispose of this material responsibly, and also it holds recyclers to an account that they have to follow a certain compliance framework to make sure that the data is getting dealt with correctly, and make sure that the materials are being recovered in the most environmentally friendly manner possible.
All right. Well, good on you, Patrick. Thanks for being with us for a bit of an insight on that issue there. Why are we still doing badly with e-waste? That's Eco CEO Patrick Moynihan. I just got to sneak in a couple more texts about getting married. It's just fantastic. My husband and I decided all the stress wasn't worth it. We had 6 people at our wedding and had an awesome blowout honeymoon in the Maldives. No regrets. Yeah, there's such really great actually thoughts here. When my husband and I got married, the mortgage interest rates were 18%, a long time ago now. So when we got married, it was in the backyard of my brother's, and our guests bought a plate and BYO, and no one had a problem. We asked for no presents, just their presence. And guess what? We had a fabulous time. How about that? Well, today, do stick around, because after 7, we have the detail, and there's evidence Kiwis are getting more trigger-happy when it comes to using courts to stamp down on competition, and Our Changing World with Claire Concannon. Two great pieces of radio that you need to stick around for. But I wanted to bring this up very, very briefly. It came a bit of a silly discussion, didn't it, yesterday, on what is essentially a very important topic, and that is the school lunch announcement, including what would be on offer. An end to quinoa, couscous and hummus lunches would be more like your no-frills simian fruit. When asked about food items like sushi for lunches, David Seymour said, if you don't get that sushi as woke, then I don't know how to wake you up. This was Prime Minister Chris Luxon. So I guess I just wanted to touch on this briefly. I mean, Georgie, you're in communications. Was this an off-the-cuff thing, or was it a part of the messaging?
Well, this is completely David Seymour 101, right? Like, he's in this anti-woke narrative. It's what works for him. But can we just give a shout-out to that spin-off piece that listed what is woke and what is not woke food, and just how glorious it was to trawl through it and chuckle.
Avocado woke, cheese rolls not woke, hot dogs not woke, Greek yogurt woke.
Also, crunchy peanut butter is not woke. It's just superior. Full stop.
Okay.
The end.
All right, Selwyn.
Yeah, sorry, I fell out of the mix there for a bit. I reconnected.
I just wanted to know whether it was an off-the-cuff thing or part of the messaging.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, we know that a political brand with David Seymour is there. If we take I really liked what Georgie just said there, you know, hat tip to the spin-off for the approach it did. I just thought that was genius in the way it reported that, and obviously the Herald did too. But getting back to this, what I didn't like about it is this continuation of the politicising of things, even from the point of view of the choice of foods we have, into saying it's woke or it's not. So it's either, you know, we saw this in so many different things over the past years. You know, you're a certain political brand if you wore a mask, or, you know, and it's just such a stupid way of going about it. This food is woke, that is not. So I thought the spin-off absolutely nailed this by basically just putting two hands up in the air and saying, here's some satire to expose how stupid such comments are.
All right, we'll put that to bed. But really great comments, both kia ora, Georgie Stiliano and Selwyn Manning them. All right, so already a very big response on this. They say physical media is dead, but as it turns out, the book still reigns supreme, despite things like Kindles and audiobooks. Print book sales have actually risen by 10% post-pandemic, but one fragment of book sales is waning a bit, or at least from this overseas article from Slate, and that so-called middle grade books for ages 8 to 12, it's been called the decline by 9. So sales were down 16%, 2022 fell a further 10%. It got us thinking, what was the one young adult's book that was your gateway? And gosh, what a response. Absolutely concur, Wallace, with you. Flowers in the Attic. We must be the same age. Another one here. A.A. Milne, Wind in the Willows, Teenager, The Snow Goose, George's Marvellous Medicine by Roald Dahl. But with us, anyway, is Jenna Todd, the manager of independent bookstore Time Out. Jenna, good to have you here.
Kia ora, Wallace.
So let me ask you straight up, in Aotearoa, decline by 9. Is it a thing in this country? Do you, your sense, anecdotally?
I do not believe so in my sense, where there are a lot of young readers that are lucky enough to be able to come in and out to our shop and engage, and there are really engaged young readers around. It's just how we engage the readers that aren't reading as much, or how do we keep them reading, or what's that one book, that gateway book that's going to set them off to be a reader for pleasure?
Because that's why I brought it up, really, because I do quite clearly recall, you know, one or two books and then I was on my way, you know, and actually it was less Flowers in the Attic. It was Amazon Adventure by Willard Price. I don't know if you still sell that, Jenna. It's a bit old school. Georgie, let's bring you in.
Well, look, I mean, I'm so pleased that book sales are actually up. I'm surprised by that. I don't think it's any coincidence that the 8 to 12 reading age group is dropping off, though, because that would be exactly the time that children are getting smartphones, which is terrible. But I think, is there an equivalent of, like, your Enid Blyton, Secret Seven, Famous Five? And
yes,
for me, I'm a 90s child. It was Harry Potter. I know that's not cool anymore, and J.K. Rowling is not our friend anymore.
But she was the gateway for so many.
That is right. And for me, I'm not sure if there is a rival book series that captures imaginations the way that Harry Potter did my peer group.
What do you reckon, Jenna? Because they often say, you know, we need more of those big tent pole books, or tent pole series, as they call, you know, that hold others up. Your thoughts?
Exactly. I think the series are really great for young ones to keep them reading. And what we're finding at Time Out is a series called the Scandar series by A.F. Bedman. That's been promoted as for fans of Harry Potter and Philip Pullman. The fourth one just came out, and also at Time Out we love Australian author Jess Townsend. She has written the Nevermore series, and the fourth one's about to come out in October.
And are young adults loving it?
Absolutely loving it. And we love having kids come in when they know that a new book is about to come. The saddest thing as a bookseller is when you have to tell them the next one in the series hasn't been written yet, and they have to wait.
All right, Selwyn Manning, what was your gateway book?
Oh, I'm a bit sad, Wallace. I had been given these encyclopedias of science. There was 20 of them, and I poured through those. So it's non-fiction.
Showing
so
off
I apologise
now
for that. But look, it's so good to hear from Jenna that there is still a really good, take of the younger reader. The weekend, it was down in Wellington, I was speaking to two friends who are both book editors, and they were speaking about how strong the young adult fiction is coming out of New Zealand at the moment.
Right.
And they were quite proud of that particular part of New Zealand fiction writing. So I just hope that, like Jenna's experience is, the younger authors, younger readers, that they get to the point where they're younger adults and then they're really on their way. You know, let's just hope it happens because it's such a rewarding thing, isn't
Jenna?
And I think it's really important, if you want to be a family of readers, to model that behaviour that you want to see from your children. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to my friend Juliet Blythe from Reading Z today, and she said, crucially, you need to be a champion for your child's reading. Keep reading aloud. Once your kid starts reading by themselves, still make books a part of the conversation, and also recommendations. And I think that's where booksellers and librarians play a big part in the reading life of a child, but if we're making friends talk about books together, there's lots of positives with talking about books. And that's where screens are good as well, and social media are really good for recommendations.
Oh, okay, because it's all about the recommend, eh? It's interesting, that's the same with young adults too. Someone says, Wallace, reading for pleasure is not included in the 3 hours of reading, writing and maths, so that doesn't help. It's not considered structured enough from a book-loving primary teacher. That's something worth following up. But for now, Jenna, kia ora, great to have you here. Keep up the good work. And George Estiliano, Sawa Manning, a big thank you for being on the show.
Yes. It's a pleasure, Wallace.
Yeah. Thank you, Wallace.
All right. So, very good to have you here. And thank you so much for your comments. Someone says, books are woke. Stay with me. I'm here with you tonight.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.